There's a business phrase that I heard constantly during 42 years in the workforce. I've been retired now 4 years, 3 months. It's wonderful. I should have started the workforce that way, started in retirement. And I took the phrase as a criticism of the system or a word against the competence of someone working. But I began to understand, especially when I began working for a government contractor. I worked for Lockheed for 34 years. We put things into space. It was kind of fun. And it seemed to be a basic guide as products and programs moved forward. It was a bit cynical, seemingly harmless, mostly. And the phrase you're well aware of, good enough for government work. Good enough for government work. I discovered that the ideal condition and situation, you know, what we wanted to build, what we wanted and what we asked for, and what was expected and paid for, didn't always arrive. There was a, this is what we want, but this is what we'll accept. There was, here is the ideal, here was the minimum. Good enough for government work. And with everything in place, whether it's design, material, manpower, manufacturing capability, scheduling, finances, the complete success could be achieved if everything was in its right spot. It was wonderful. However, when everything was not in place, there was still that minimum that the government would accept. Now keep in mind, when you throw things into space, the difference between what you want and the minimum is small, very small, because it still needs to function. When you put things into space, there's no return policy, there's no house calls, but it has to work. It has to work. Good enough for government work. There is very little difference between what you're asking for and what you are willing to accept. Society is learning the attitude of good enough. It has permeated society. Good enough is the lowering of standards and expectations because the ideal, the standard, sometimes is just too difficult to achieve. Good enough, January 28, 1986. I remember where I was. I remember the conversations with the people I was having. It was STS-51s, Space Shuttle 51, the 51st flight of the Space Shuttle. It was the Space Shuttle Challenger. We come to discover that we had repeatedly flew our space shuttles in a no-go condition. Should have stood down, should not have flown our space shuttle. But they had repeatedly flown in a no-go condition because they weren't caught. The O-ring, I won't go into the details of it, but the O-ring at a certain temperature became hard. And in Florida, when you're launching in the morning, the O-ring was hard. And if it's hard, it doesn't flex, and it doesn't prevent hot gases escaping. And hot gases escaped and blew into the main tank, and the shuttle disaster took place. They launched continually. It became known as standard deviation from the norm. They flew 10 or 11 missions in a no-go condition, but they didn't get caught, so it's a standard deviation from the norm. We can fly in a no-go condition until good enough wasn't good enough. And we lost the crew. We lost multi-billion dollars worth of technology. That needs to stay there so I can see it. It's my timer. You want me to see the timer. What had developed was a culture of incremental deviance. It's called the normalization of deviation. Good enough is just good enough. But is it? The idea of good enough is being taught to us as a way of life. You go online right now, you'll find articles titled, How Good Enough is Enough, Why Your Best is Good Enough, I Am Enough, I don't know what that means, How good is enough? Or letting go of perfect because good enough is for now. Good enough, is it good enough? If you like titles, my title is Good Enough Isn't. It just isn't. An attitude of good enough allows us to have an exit strategy from excellence. You're able to step away from standards. There's an article, I'll just read a little bit from it. It's called The Power of Good Enough by Olga Kazan in 2015. It was an op-ed piece. I'll just capture some pieces here. Writes, over a decade ago, psychologist Barry Schwartz published what might be the ultimate psychological life-hacking tome, The Paradox of Choice, Why More is Less. And he discusses why we have so many options. Just settle for what works. Just settle. Just settle. Good enough. He writes, as people have contact with items of high quality, they begin to suffer the curse of discernment. The lower quality items that used to be perfectly acceptable are no longer good enough. The hedonic zero point keeps rising, and expectations and aspirations rise with it. As a result, the rising quality of experience is met with rising expectations, and people are just running in place. As long as expectations keep pace with realizations, people may live better, but they won't feel better about how they live. Meaning that if you strive for standards, you just won't be happy. Schwartz's solution, the article continues, as he recently explained to the psychological blogger Eric Baker, don't know where that goes, is to settle for something that's acceptable, even if you know that there's likely something better out there. That's part of where we are. Society is being taught, okay, good enough. As choices increase, this is what we're hearing here. As choices increase, expectation rises, and people become unhappy. Therefore, settle. Be happy. Lower the bar. Release the stress. Go and do just what is good enough. Just what is good enough. In another Q&A session on Reddit, Schwartz, again the same fellow, he concludes, it can be hard in our culture to force yourself to settle for good enough, but when it comes to happiness and satisfaction, good enough isn't just good, it's perfect. Just good. Good enough. Good enough is perfect. Again, good enough allows you to have an exit strategy from what is right. But is good enough really good enough? Is it godly to think that way? Is it a valid lifestyle? Is it a valid lifestyle? Would 0.1% in error be good enough? 99.9% excellent work, and just 0.1% being off. Well, if that were true, every 2 minutes, 1,900 people would consume a meal that led to illness in the U.S. Every hour, 1,000 ATMs would dispense incorrect amounts. Would that be good enough? Every 24 hours, 583,000 pieces of mail would be delivered incorrectly. Every week, 44,000 medical prescriptions would be written incorrectly. Is that good enough? 103,000 income tax returns would be processed incorrectly. If 99.9% was just good enough, it's not. 291 pacemakers would be performed incorrectly. That's life and death. Is that good enough? Society is being taught good enough. When I went to Lockheed, on the floor, on the mats, on the walls, we had zero defects. That's what the big push was, zero defects. We couldn't afford to make a mistake. Something goes into space, we're not going after it. What happened to the Hubble telescope? Well, we told the government we needed to do certain tests on its optics. And they said it was good enough the way it was. We launched. A few years later, we launched another shuttle program to put eyeglasses on it because it didn't work. We had to spend, I forget how many hundreds of millions, to put eyeglasses on the Hubble telescope to make it work because it just wasn't good enough. We had a time card change. We went from hard copy time cards to electronic. And people grumbled, we can't do this, rah, rah, rah. And the manager just said, they'll work it out. It's their pay. And they worked it out in a day. They could not stay with the old system. They had to go to the new system. And grumble or not, they worked it out. In the book of life about substantial things, relationships, incomes, and careers by David Winnicott, he's a 1950 British psychoanalyst, In the book, in the chapter titled Virtue of Character, under Good Enough, he writes, "The concept of good enough was invented as an escape from dangerous ideals. The concept of good enough was invented as an escape from dangerous ideals. It began in relation to parenthood, but can be applied across life more generally and specifically around work and love. Good enough was invented as an escape from ideals." We're being taught just good enough. Everything is just good enough. Society is rewarded by accepting whatever is good enough. Whether it's an event or occasion or celebration, we understand we have a single adversary in our lives. It's not each other. We don't fight each other. It's not the world out there, society. We have a single adversary, Satan the devil. In Revelation 12:9, he says that he deceives everything in this world. He lies. Good enough is a lie. 1 John 5:19 says that he holds sway. There's an emotional attraction. You have a conversation with someone who is emotionally attached to something that makes no logical sense. It's because there's a sway being held there. And good enough isn't good enough. We move from God's holy days to man's holidays, and we think, well, is it good enough? Some of the holidays, well, coming up is Christmas. It still references God and Jesus Christ, right? It still references God and Jesus Christ. You don't have to go there, but John 4:24 says that we worship God two ways. In spirit, from the heart and mind, from the inside, everything about us, and in truth. And in truth. What is the truth about Christmas? Well, he wasn't born at Christmas. There's no fat man running around giving gifts. Christmas is based on the law, yeah. Jesus was not born around December 25th. Christmas worships Jesus Christ. Yes, it comes from the Bible. No. Santa Claus has a godlike ability, doesn't he? He visits everybody in the night. And he has the ability to know whether you're sleeping or not, whether you've been good or not. And if we go from holy days to holidays, then we've gone to whatever is good enough. Man's holidays introduces the bigger lie, that good enough can replace God's righteousness, the ideal. When we get down to it, people don't change when living good enough lives. I'm doing just good enough. I'm okay. People don't grow when they live good enough lives. There's no need to change. If we think that we're just doing good enough, then we're good. We're all right. Replacing God's righteousness with man's goodness reduces stress, relieves anxiety, and creates an easy way out from the demands of high standards. I remember in high school I had a difficulty. I better watch this. I had a difficulty with Christmas. And I was learning that God's way and man's way, there was a conflict there. And I had such stress wanting to be part of things because I was really not a popular person in high school. And then I had this religious thing that drew me away from even being close. But I was replacing God's righteousness with man's goodness. I mean, it's a good thing. Let's love each other. Let's share with each other. Let's give with each other, right? You know what the spirit of Christmas is? It's atonement for neglect of a whole year. It's really what it is. I had to back away from that. Replacing God's righteousness with man's goodness reduces stress, relieves anxiety, creates an easy way out from the demand of high standards. In Florida, there was this wonderful church. You could go there in your pajamas because you just went to the drive-in, put the little machine on your window, and you had church services. You get the hair curlers because you're going out late that night, and you got your pajamas, you got your coffee and your breakfast. There's no fellowship. And just make it easy on yourself. Come to church. Make it easy on yourself. It'll be good enough. It'll be good enough. When did this all begin anyway? Well, we could go back to the beginning in Genesis 2. We know that there was the two trees, the tree of life, where our name needs to be, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, by which society is able to function. It understands what is right and wrong, good and evil. It doesn't understand what righteousness is. but it understands what is good and evil. Satan came along and offered a better way. God said, this is what I want you to do, and this is what I don't want you to do. And Satan says, hey, good enough. Go ahead. Look, the food, it looks good to eat. Have a bite. Take a bite. He offered something a little easier in choice and said, God said no, but that just made it enticing. And Adam and Eve were expelled for going to a lesser standard, trying to live good enough. What does our Father say about good enough? Remember that we worship God in truth and in spirit. Man says that good enough is an escape from dangerous ideals, that the ideals that we want to live up to are dangerous to us. Now, the ideal is a person or thing regarded as perfect, a model for imitation, a standard for perfection. Excellent. Let's go to Matthew 5. Matthew 5. Yeah, this will work. Matthew 5. Jesus is discussing society's view of good enough and how God's view of righteousness is a little different. Matthew 5. We're talking about the Beatitudes here. These are how we are to act. If we are a Christ follower, if we are wanting to carry the label of being Christian, these are attitudes that we want to have. These are standards that we want to live up to. We are living examples now of how to live according to God's way. There are standards. There are standards. And then Jesus Christ expanded those standards, making it more impacting and more profound. Verse 17, Matthew 5, verse 17. Do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Now, when you read it in the Greek, it means to make complete. It's not to do away with. To make complete. On one side, we are keeping the law physically. Because I didn't kill somebody doesn't mean I didn't harbor hate in my heart. Now, because of Jesus Christ and because of his Holy Spirit, it is now complete because I now have to be different on the inside. We worship God in spirit and in truth. For assuredly, I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one little, one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled. Whoever therefore breaks the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. If we water down the standards, we run a risk. We run a huge risk. But whoever does them and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Good enough is not good enough. When we think of Paul as a Pharisee, when we think of the Pharisees who worked so hard to live to the letter of the law, to capture a way of life, of severely observing things, our righteousness needs to exceed that. They did it physically. We need to do it, not just physically, but also spiritually. We need to change ourselves. We need to move from mere action to thought so that we're now complete. Our righteousness, which is actually the righteousness of Christ in us, must exceed that of the Pharisees, who are known for the character, who were known for not just good enough. God's law is more binding on us now, it's not less. Not made good enough, not simply just to be trying. Matthew 5 is from the heart. We now observe the Ten Commandments from the heart. It's now resident in our mind. Verse 48. Therefore, you shall be perfect. The word can also mean become, because none of us are perfect. You won't be perfect today. You shall become perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. The goal is to be like God with his perfection. The word means to become perfect, teleos, brought to a finish, to be complete, wanting nothing, full grown and mature, not just good enough. Not just good enough. The question has to come up then, will God accept good enough in his kingdom? When you think about God's perfect kingdom, will he just accept what is good enough? God already had perfection in the kingdom until pride was found in it. We're talking about Lucifer, who was perfect in all his ways until it was good enough for him to think differently about God and trying to overthrow him. He already had perfection. God won't change his standards. God's kingdom is reachable by us with his spirit for us. His standards won't change. He will not lower his standards. It's we who must change. It's we who must overcome. It's we who must have a different attitude and a different way of viewing life. Good enough is not good enough. Some theologians claim that the Ten Commandments are simply too hard to keep, and without God's Spirit, frankly, they are. Because it takes an understanding to what God's Spirit is intending with those Ten Commandments and his power and ability to keep them. And even though we have God's Spirit, we still have to choose to observe those Ten Commandments. Philippians 4:13 just says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. What a beautiful sentiment. Very true. I like to play with that. I can do all things. And sometimes I surprise myself because I find myself, I have weaknesses. But I can do all things through Christ. I can do all things. I can do all things. There's nothing left out. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And the focus of our relationship needs to be on God and Jesus Christ. And believe me, that can't be just good enough. That can't be just good enough. With God's Spirit, all things are possible. You go to 1 Corinthians 2, you'll see three spirits involved there. Spirit of man, which gives us thought, the ability to create and think. The spirit of the world, which is Satan, Revelation 12, 1 John 5. And the Spirit of God, which opens up spiritual things to us. Opens our mind to understand where we are going. The plan of God, which is so brilliant in its simplicity and its application. God expects us to be all in. I love that phrase. It's kind of a poker phrase. I don't play poker because I don't give my money away. It's also a term you might think about parachuting. I don't parachute either. My niece has 4 times. Scary thing. I will never leave a perfectly good airplane. If the wings are on it, I'm going to fly it down. God expects us to be all in everything, to live with passion, that good enough in our lives isn't good enough. When we think about our apostle Peter, he was all in. And then before he got God's Spirit, he was kind of all in various ways. He was always entertaining to read. King David, we heard about King David. King David was all in. He was a man after God's own heart. He was fully engaged in what God was doing in his life. Our life is not a total sum where you can do a -5 today and a 10 tomorrow and you're at 5 even. It's got to be all in every day where our life is just not good enough on a daily basis. I have a shirt. This is a nice shirt. 10 buttons. And if we think 90% is real good, because if you go to college, 90% is an A if you take a test. Well, it popped one button today. The top one. I am missing my top button. But that's only one button out of 10. It should be good enough. I'm still bothered by it because it's not good enough. I like to be all together. Matthew 22. Speed up here. Matthew 22 and verse 34. This is how we should be. God's word wants us to move away from complacency and mediocrity. Matthew 22, verse 34. But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. They were surprised. This man shut up the smart ones. One of them, a lawyer, asked them a question. testing him, saying, see, he didn't want an answer. He was just wanting to trip him up. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And Jesus said to him, you shall love the law with all, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. You're all in. There's nothing in this world that is going to hold you back. There's nothing in this world that's going to distract you. There's nothing in this world that wants you, that will keep you from being righteous with God, as opposed to good enough. As opposed to good enough. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. The word hang means to be held up and to be supported. We love God with all our heart and all our soul, all our mind. And the word all does mean all. It means whole, complete, without reservation. And we do this with God's standards, not man's standards, God's standards. Sharon? God's word warns us about complacency and mediocrity, about setting to the low standards we might find around us, about accepting what just might be good enough. In the world of music, there's a lot of music out there, and when you buy your music, you expect excellence, you expect perfection. When you hear it multiple times, you know how the music goes, and you have great expectation. But what if music was also good enough at 90%? What if we sang number 73 in the hymn book, How I Love Thy Law, O Lord, by Mark Graham? And of the melody line, there are 60 plus notes, and 10% were wrong. Just 10%. Sharon? I want you to know it took 10 minutes to get her to play that badly. It was not easy for Sharon to do that. But that music is not singable. It's not promotable. You won't be able to sell it. And you think, well, perfection is not possible. You buy music that is perfectly practiced without error. Yeah, I wasn't going to do this. I'm now at risk here. Hebrews 5, verse 14. I'm off the reservation. Hebrews 5, verse 14. What happens is we can't allow complacency and mediocrity in our lives. We can't set our standards low. We have to rise up past good enough. Past good enough. Hebrews 5, verse 13, for everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he's a babe. Hasn't fully practiced God's way, hasn't fully engaged God's way, hasn't fully used God's spirit. But solid food belongs to those who are of full age, mature, that is, those who by reason of use, those who have practiced, those who have a habit, those who have changed from that which is just good enough, and work toward excellence. By reason of use, have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. When we practice God's way and the world comes at us with different standards, we, by use of God's Spirit and His Word, can discern between what's right and wrong, good and evil, and the impact that it has on us. How important that is. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 1. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 1. 1 Corinthians 10. Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, all ate the same spiritual food, all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. They tried to live to a lower standard. Now these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. And do not become idolaters as some of them, as it was written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and in one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Verse 11. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. If you think you're doing a great job, take another look. Because if it's just good enough, it isn't. It isn't. If it's just good enough, it isn't. Our righteousness must exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees, and that's a challenge. That's a difficulty. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 17. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new. Now all things are of God, who has reconciled us to himself through Jesus Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. That is, that God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself, not imputing their trespass to them, and has committed to us the word of reconciliation. Now then, we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were pleading through us. We implore you, on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. For he made him who knew no sin to be sin for us, that we might become the righteousness of God. We are to seek God's righteousness. We are to put on the righteousness of Christ in our minds. Philippians 2:5 says we're to have the mind of Christ in us. That's not a casual thing. That's not a good enough thing. We have a mandate, an official commission from God. Let's close with Romans 12. Close with Romans 12, verse 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. You have committed to yourself a way of life that is a perfect sacrifice to God. Holy, acceptable to God, which is only a reasonable service. That's a rational service. And do not be conformed to this world. And do not be transformed by the renewing of your mind. But be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. That we are to prove, the word means to do, to follow, to test, to examine, to scrutinize, to recognize as genuine what is that perfect will of God, that which is perfect, wanting nothing, full grown. We have to come and ask the question of ourselves, is my relationship with God good enough? And how do I improve it? Is my relationship with Jesus Christ just good enough? And how do I improve it? What do I do to improve my marriage if it's just good enough? How do I deal with my children in child rearing if I'm just doing a good enough job? Is the entertainment I'm looking at good enough for a Christian? The TV programs, the books I read, the movies I go to, the internet, which is so risky. Is all that good enough? How do I keep the Sabbath? Am I just doing a good enough job? We have to ask ourselves, if nothing else, we walk away with, is good enough in my life good enough? What can I improve? God will not accept good enough in his kingdom. That's a foundation. Satan would have us believe that good enough is good enough, that God's standards are unattainable ideals, even dangerous ideals, that good enough would be accepted for access into God's kingdom. Well, Satan is a liar and the father of lies, and as a mindset, as a way of thinking, as a way of life, as an attitude, we need to recognize good enough just isn't good enough. That we are to love God with all our heart, soul, and mind. And we are to worship God in spirit and in truth. What does all this tell us? It says that God must come first in everything. And that when we think we're good enough, we need to rethink our position. If we think we're good enough, think again. We must view God's standards as eternal standards, because they are. The standards that God has given to us go into the kingdom. They go forward forever. We now have them today, and they will go on and on and on. It's almost like the Titanic movie music. They're not going to change. The standards don't diminish. They're not going to be watered down. Oh, I'm out of time, and I just had the perfect example in my head, but I can't tell you that about it. I'll tell you maybe in chat. Our every view of God, God's way, should remind us to strive with His Spirit to overcome, to change, to imitate God, to obey His laws, to follow His ways, and to do all with His Spirit, to be all in, to love God with all our heart, soul, and mind, and all our being. For us today, the question is, good enough is really not good enough, is it? It's always a pleasure. We'll talk to you after.